Well, hey, welcome back to Country Fried Rock. We dug out a couple of old hard drives, found some of these old episodes from 2009 through 2020, and figured, what the hell, y'all should hear them. Ton of fantastic musicians and bands, many of whom are still out there making great music. I decided to just throw some of these old episodes back out there. They have not been re-edited, so half these places don't even exist anymore. Never mind the URLs, don't even bother. But a lot of these bands really made great music, and I want you to hear it. Dig them up on your favorite streaming service if you can't find them elsewhere, and go see a show if they're still playing. So if you're new to Country Fried Rock, starting back in 2009, this was a syndicated radio show that aired in more than 50 markets across the globe. The structure follows some of the format of older syndicated radio programs, and we left it that way. So we'll bounce around back into the archives and let us know if there's anybody in particular you'd like us to try to dig up off these extremely disorganized hard drives. No matter what, we sure appreciate you being here. You can toss some money in the tip jar or what the hell, join the fan club. But it's most important that you check out this music. It's all there for you these days on countryfriedrock.com and your favorite podcast app. Tell a friend, smash that follow button, and give us a 5-star rating and review. That hasn't changed, no matter how much my hair color and eyeglasses have. Thanks for being here. Hey, y'all, it's Sloane Spencer. Thanks so much for finding all these new old episodes of Country Fried Rock. I've got something completely different available these days called Sleep with Rock Stars. And it all started from a listener comment back in the very early days of Country Fried Rock who said, you know, I slow these down to 75% and fall asleep to them. And I was like, well, over the years, I started thinking about it, and I recently started Sleep with Rock Stars. It's the Gen X Sleep Podcast, and you can find it at sleepwithrockstars.com or your favorite podcast app.
Welcome to Country Fried Rock, where we talk with musicians to find out what inspires their creativity. Country Fried Rock, music uncovered. We apologize for the audio quality on this week's radio show. It doesn't really meet our standards. It's a good conversation. Thanks a bunch for listening. My guest today on Country Fried Rock is Ewan Curry of the band The Sheepdogs. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We're really excited to have y'all with us. What kind of led to the development of The Sheepdogs as a band?
It came out of, you know, a bunch of young men who were bored with going to university and the kind of direction that our lives are going at about 1920. So, you know, we just wanted to do something completely different. And I think that it was like the secret dream to be in a rock band that we had always sort of harbored. And we just finally went for it one day.
So when did you get into music originally?
Growing up, I played a lot of music. My dad's a musician, so I played piano and played the old licorice stick for a while as well. But I always wanted to play guitar.
So when did that come around?
In high school, my high school had like an acoustic guitar class that's pretty basic, and you'd learn how to play like, you know, scales and stuff like that. That was kind of my first chance to just get my hands on one.
Well, so at what point did the guitar become something that was a little more appealing than scales?
I always liked rock music and it's always centered around guitars, but probably when I was in like 7th or 8th grade, I got like a Jimi Hendrix Best Of, and it kind of blew open a lot of doors.
At what point did you start playing for people outside of the school classes and your family?
I don't know. I guess my first sort of like public performance was like, I was in a couple of musicals in high school. It's kind of embarrassing because it's like the most corny music ever, but it was my first chance to sing in front of people. That was sort of the first public foray, but not necessarily the one I want to be remembered for.
Sure. Well, so then at what point did your guitar and your band develop, you know, early on there to where it was something that was happening for the public?
Well, we had our usual, you know, open stages and battle the bands kind of appearances. And probably around the time that we started being able to play shows in our hometown and get, you know, 100 people out of the show was probably the first time that, you know, okay, we have something that's worth coming out to see and paying a small amount of money to go see. That was probably the first indicator.
Were you all playing cover songs at that point?
No, I mean, we definitely did cover songs to sort of fill out the set. But even from the get-go, we would try and do original material, which I think is pretty indicative of a lot of bands nowadays. I don't think there's as many like straight cover bands, but we had a good mix going on.
What did y'all like to cover at the time?
We played most of the stuff off the first Kings of Leon album, Young Manhood album. Black Keys, White Stripes, sort of the rock music of the time. Like, this is like early 2000s, so kind of the rock music that emulated sort of more the roots elements of rock that we liked. Cream or Beatles or Hendrix and things like that as well.
What developed for you all as it led towards The Sheepdogs?
a large part of it was for us just basically learning our instruments, because I had a very low amount of the things I could do on a guitar, and Ryan, you know, sort of just had to learn the bass, and Sam learned the drums from the first day we even jammed. So we were really, really bad. Spent a lot of time in the basement and sort of toiling away. Like, I don't think we played publicly for about 8 months, because we were terrible and we knew it. We just didn't want to subject anyone to that. Over the next 4 years, probably, we were sort of developing our style and learning how to sing and play our instruments and figuring out, you know, what we could do and what showcased sort of the best of our abilities and all that.
Well, 4 years then is a long time to develop who you are. Where did that end up?
Musically, it sort of hang our hat on the fact that we have vocal harmonies, you know, three-part harmonies and sometimes four, with the addition of my brother who plays with us live now. And then also, you know, just having rock music that had upfront guitars, but still had sort of melody, and thinking about bands like the Beatles and the Kinks that had a premium on melody. You know, we wanted to have all the riffs and groove and everything of good rock music, but we always wanted to have nice melody and harmony as well. It was sort of figuring out how to put all those things together.
Well, yeah, because that's a little different than like the more sparse sound, like that early Black Keys stuff. Or the White Stripes at the time.
That and the White Stripes, like, those songs are really easy to learn because it's guitar licks and... And especially the White Stripes, is the, you know, little drumming you can do. But yeah, you know, we wanted, especially when we became four piece, when Lee had joined us, we definitely wanted to have a fuller sound. We didn't want to have a stripped down thing. We wanted to have two guitars and multiple voices singing.
How is that working for you all in terms of playing live?
I mean, it was very intertwined with playing live, because that's predominantly what we were doing. We were practicing in the basement, and then we were trying to gig as much as we could, whether it was gigging around Saskatoon or taking a road trip to Winnipeg or going on the road and finding a bunch of terrible shows to play across Canada. Everything was kind of centered around the live gig. And, you know, that was how we determined whether new songs would make the cut or what things worked and what didn't.
At what point did it lead to, we need to make a record?
We were making records a little way along, but when you sell, you know, a few hundred copies, 1,000 copies of an album, there's more interaction going on with actually playing live, because you can immediately get feedback and you see what keeps people's attention. And you know, we were going into so many of these gigs where there was no expectations, there was no you know, you were the night's entertainment at that bar, and so you had to kind of win people's ears. You know, they'd kind of stop in and hear what the music sounded like, see what the cover was. So we were all about doing things that would, you know, catch their ear and draw them in. So I think that's a big part of shaping our sound. We're very conscious about, you know, pleasing an audience. And I think sometimes if you just record, it's very much sort of pleasing yourself. And I think we have kind of a nice balance of both areas. Hey, this is Ewan Curry from the Sheepdogs, and you're listening to Country Fried Rock.
We apologize for the audio quality on this week's radio show. It doesn't really meet our standards. It's a good conversation. Thanks a bunch for listening.
So at what point did it expand beyond the smaller clubs and bars across Canada?
That's really, I mean, certain areas like Winnipeg and our hometown, we started being able to do like, you know, a few hundred people and, you know, sell out a theater or something like that. But right across the country, it kind of has only really been the last couple of years that things have kind of moved to a next level. We really felt like we'd kind of plateaued in terms of where our success was going. And certainly, you know, we were in this whole big Rolling Stone competition last year. That certainly gave us a huge shot in the arm. And now the crowds are much bigger and get to play all these cool, you know, summer festivals and stuff too.
What led to getting involved with that competition?
It was not a public thing where, you know, we submitted or, you know, we saw the ad in the back of a magazine. It was like an insider only. Like, I think Rolling Stone was working in conjunction with Atlantic Records to curate the competition. So they put out the call to sort of all the industry types, you know, management and such. One of those people was our now manager, Joel Carrier, and he passed along our album to one of the A&R guys from Atlantic, and it made it in the final cut. And they asked us, you know, is this something you'd be into? And you know, where we were at that point in time, you know, we couldn't really pick and choose about, you know, what we wanted to do as it pertained to our music career, because we just didn't really have one. We were all struggling to make money. We were all broke. We were all trying to work jobs back home and still trying to tour. So an easy decision.
And so then what changed for you all after that?
You know, just the demand. All of a sudden, we were getting gigs. We were getting played on the radio, especially in Canada. And people were really excited about it. And it kind of affirmed a lot of what we had believed, although you never know until it actually happens. But we always believed we had this good, you know, sound, and we had a good band. And anytime people came and saw us, they always went away saying, you guys are great. Really, really enjoyed it. You're doing something we just don't hear. The one thing we never had was that publicity, that, you know, widespread advertisements. So, you know, it kind of gave us what we needed.
Have you noticed anything different with the types of audiences that are finding you?
There's a little bit of difference. It's always been pretty diverse. You know, we've got underage kids that grew up playing Guitar Hero and learning about Pink Floyd and that kind of stuff. And then there's like baby boomers at the other end of the spectrum who grew up, who tell us that they were at whatever show that the Allman Brothers played or something like that.
Right.
There's all, you know, varieties in between. There's lots of just 20s and 30s something guys and gals. And I love that it's diverse like that. I wouldn't want it to be for just a hipster audience or just for hippies or anything. I want, you know, I want everybody.
With this most recent record, The Sheepdogs, even though it's self-titled, it's not your first record.
No, it's our fourth full-length album. But, you know, it's the first album that when it got released, it was actually in stores and especially outside of Canada and around the world. So we went with the self-title thinking it's kind of like an intro.
Sure. What led to that recording process? So before you actually got into the studio, where were you all of like, okay, here's what's going to happen?
Well, basically, it was a crazy 2011 where we played as much as we could, and the travel was like nothing we'd ever experienced, you know, going back and forth across the continent and even overseas. You know, we took a trip to Australia, though I think we went for like 2 or 3 days and came right back.
Oh my gosh.
Chance to get jet lagged. At the end of 2011, we basically toured all the way up until Christmas. And along those last few months, we had organized with Pat Carney that we were going to do an album, and it just became an issue of, you know, when are we going to have time? You know, we're very busy and so is he. So all of a sudden, this 2 weeks in January of this year got earmarked for recording. And so it was kind of like I'd be on a tour bus and trying to go through demos and figure out, you know, what the hell are we going to record?
How did you all end up choosing to work with him in the first place?
You know, we definitely want to work with somebody interesting, and you know, you always want to work with musicians that you respect and like and admire. And we met him in New York at a show and had a mutual friend and were chatting. And you meet a lot of people and they're, you know, they're nice or fake nice or whatever. But Pat was immediately like asking us, you know, what are you guys going to do next? Well, he was very curious, you know, as to what our plan was. So.
Cool.
We just threw it at him, you know, why don't you produce it?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm too busy, but, you know, eventually it worked out, you know, so, I mean, like I said, we covered the Black Keys back in 2004 or such, and I've been listening to them since about 02, and so it was an easy choice.
Did you all go in to record with him with everything demoed out already?
No, I mean, it was really all over the place. Some songs had been recorded, you know, in their entirety earlier, and so we knew what the arrangements were, and others were, you know, like a chorus and a riff and needed expanding. So it was kind of all over the place. But our attitude going in was everything we did all last year was, you know, by the seat of our pants and just kind of having to roll with the situation. And you know, nothing was ever ideal. You know, we play 3 different parts of the continent, you know, in a weekend, you know, Friday in the West Coast.
Insane.
Saturday in the East Coast and, you know, flying all over the place. So our attitude was just, you know, it's not ideal, but let's make the best of it. We got a good opportunity, and it just worked out because I think that's, you know, 2011 was our best year we had ever had, and by being adaptable and just trying to be tough and work with whatever is going on, you know, that's how we had success.
Several great musician friends of Country Fried Rock generously donated songs for a free music sampler. Download it at noisetrade.com/countryfriedrock. 19 songs to help raise awareness and money for Nucci Space, a nonprofit serving the mental health needs of musicians in the Athens, Georgia area. Find out more about Nucci's at nuci.org.
Hey, this is Ewan from The Sheepdogs. Check us out at www.thesheepdogs.com.
We apologize for the audio quality on this week's radio show. It doesn't really meet our standards. It's a good conversation. Thanks a bunch for listening.
And so then, as you all got into actually recording with him, how did that process go for you?
You know, it was pretty simple. I mean, initially we just set up all in the same room, and the first couple tracks we did, we knew pretty well, so we didn't even wear headphones, let alone a click track. We played them live, and we knew what we were doing. And people always say that it's easy to mix us because we're just basically get clean tones and... I think musically, people know their role, you know, the drums and the bass or the rhythm and guitar parts. You know, we figure out how to have 2 guitars that complement each other and stay out of each other's way. When we got into some of the more songs that were being developed, a lot of that was getting a guide track down and then building on top of that.
What was the time frame between having that actually recorded and hearing some mixes coming from that?
You know, we'd get rough pretty quick. It was mixed overseas by a gentleman named Chad Blake. He's a very good mixer, and when we were getting the mixes from him, we were in Australia. We were were in Australia touring with John Fogerty and having to try and download these mixes and communicating with Pat, who was in the U.S., and Chad, who was in London, England. It's a difficult thing because when you're on the road, you know, you don't always have access to, one, good download, you know, right, internet speed, and two, a good speaker system that you can kind of sit down and listen to. It drives you insane. Like, we're listening on all these different stereos. You have no idea, you know, you're freaking out because the bass sounds weird or, you know, too high end or something. So it's tough. You know, mixing can be stressful,
mm-hmm,
even if you're not there, just because you hear it and you're, you know, you're trying to communicate through email, you know, what needs to change. So that was all involved.
What did you all notice that had changed the most?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of colors and stuff on there, but most of it is stuff that we put on. It was keyboard sounds and mm-hmm, guitar tones. You know, I think there were certain things like, you know, those little vocal effects, like, you know, maybe making a vocal effect, you know, sound washed out a little bit, or, you know, having that kind of filter, that dirty filter, or mm-hmm, like, you know, some of that slap delay. But that was no surprise. I mean, we employed some of those techniques when we mixed our own stuff too. So I like that stuff. You know, I like the gritty kind of sounds. And a track like Feeling Good, you know, the drums definitely have some processing on them. It totally works for the track. I mean, there was nothing where we got it and we were like, good God, you know, he turned it into a monster. You know? No, I think we were happy with the direction he was going in.
Since the record has come out, what has been happening for you all with your music?
Well, I mean, we've been doing this long U.S. tour that we're kind of coming to the end of right now. You know, that's been a big thing for us is trying to get beyond the long list of Canadian bands that don't really ever have much of a U.S. presence. We're very mindful of, you know, trying to make a go down here in the U.S. So that's kind of been the first thing we've been doing since about mid-September. We've been touring the U.S. And then next, we've got the Canadian tour. After that, you know, there's a lot of things along the way, you know, whether it's like making music videos or, you know, just overseeing all the little details that go into being a band. There's a lot of them going on. And hopefully, you know, Europe and Australia and the UK and all that stuff is going to come up soon as well.
This is the first time y'all have headlined through the States. How has that gone for you all?
It's gone great. I mean, we came into it with tempered expectations because we haven't done a headlining tour before, and we're going to markets that we haven't played before. And the crowd's actually been really, really good. I mean, it's definitely a different scale than in Canada, but, you know, we're playing smaller venues, but to see, you know, full houses in places we've never been to, it's really encouraging. And then, you know, a lot of the markets, like, you know, your Chicago's and New York and Seattle, San Francisco, Portland's have been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really encouraging to see that, you know, if we keep coming back and put in the hard work, you know, we can definitely build something up here.
Have there been any places that have been pleasant surprises for you?
You know, Chicago, I mean, I heard people say it's a tough town, and we had a full house at the Double Door, which is a nice venue, and, you know, it's pretty awesome. I mean, there's so much great musical history in that town. Yeah, Philly was another place, like I heard, notoriously tough for, you know, new bands, and we had a really rowdy crowd that was just so excited. And that's it. The other thing is that it's not just the numbers, but it's the type of people that come out. It's not like a too cool for school, you know, arms, you know, across sort of taking it in crowd. It's like people who are coming for a good time and they're having some beers and they're really cutting loose. And that's what I like to say.
Have you had anyone on support with you on this?
Yeah, we've been playing mostly with Black Box Revelation. Mm-hmm. They're a band from Belgium. And then we also did a week run with the Buffalo Killers, who are
mm-hmm.
from Ohio.
I love them.
They are fantastic. I wish they would do more.
Yeah, they have a fairly newish record out too.
They do, yeah. Like, it came out about the same time that ours did. They're really awesome live, too. They sing just like they do on the record.
Oh, cool.
I like Joe Walsh.
When you all are doing runs through Canada, do you choose, you know, buddy bands to come along with you?
Yeah, we do. Last winter, we had this band, Monster Truck, that are friends of ours, like a hard rock band. This year, we got Yukon Blonde, who are from the west coast of Canada. We like to have bands that we think are good and that make for a good bill, and then usually are friends as well. It's the thing, you don't get to see... You either see the band every night or you never see them, it seems like, when you're on tour. Hey, this is Ewan from the Sheepdogs, and if you want to check out our new album, go to thesheepdogs.com or get it on iTunes.
We apologize for the audio quality on this week's radio show. It doesn't really meet our standards. It's a good conversation. Thanks a bunch for listening.
Have you all done a lot of festivals while you've been on this latest run?
Yeah, this summer we did. We did Coachella and Sasquatch and Lala. And Oceaga up in Montreal, so a lot of the big ones, and those are great.
Did you get a chance to catch anyone else playing?
Yeah, we do our best. I mean, it's sometimes you're in and out and allow you to see anybody, and other times, you know, I think Sasquatch, we were there for the whole weekend, so I got to see, you know, Beck and Tenacious D and Charles Bradley. Those are probably my top three people I saw there. Coachella, I watched the Black Keys.
It's been a really intense couple of years for you all.
Yeah, it definitely has. I mean, we went from, you know, a band that would, you know, save up and hit the road for like a month and then come back and be completely broke and have to sort of pick up the pieces to, before they could go on the road again and, you know, broke and all that kind of stuff, to one that's operating pretty smoothly with a lot of promise. And basically, as a result, we haven't been home in about 2 years and we're living out of a suitcase and all that stuff too.
What would you hope to bring in or help you all continue creatively?
It kind of comes down to, you know, being able to play good live shows. Are we happy with our live shows? And are we, you know, playing good audiences and performing well? And so far we are. I feel real good about that. And then the other side is, you know, we're getting to make interesting albums and music that we think is good and that we'd want to hear. And yeah, I feel like we are there as well. You know, we made our first major label album and it went really well and we're happy with it. And we're already thinking about the next one too. I mean, we're throwing around the idea of maybe doing a little EP of sorts. And if not, we've already got ideas kind of building up for the next album. And so, you know, as long as we get to keep playing good shows and making good music, then we're happy.
Do you all throw out any new songs live that maybe haven't been recorded yet?
Not just yet, because, I mean, we had to learn all these songs from the album. So, and then, you know, we want to keep playing some of the older songs that people like and that go over really well live. You know, we're very cognizant of give the people what they want live because they're paying the money.
But so what works in keeping those early fans now that you've had these great things happen?
Well, the good thing for us is that we didn't have that many fans in the early days. But, you know, I think people respond to the same types of songs. It's not a bigger divide. Like, I don't think stylistically we've changed that much. I mean, there was a bit of a reaction, I think, among some people to our first single off this new album, you know, that maybe we had gone in this sort of streamlined approach. But when you listen to the album, you see that there's a lot of diversity there. You know, we try to play old stuff and new stuff, and we mix it up. And, you know, we try to pay attention to what people are asking for. But you just got to realize that you can't please everybody. And I think we do a pretty good job of mixing it up. And we don't get too bogged down in new fans versus old fans. We didn't have, like, this giant grassroots audience that we had. And then all of a sudden, you know, a cell phone commercial gave us a pop mainstream audience or anything like that.
As you all move forward then, if you could design a bill or bring in some of your other buddies in different ways, what would you like to do?
I love being able to pick bands that we can tour with, you know, whether it's like our friends, Yukon Blonde and Monster Truck or Buffalo Killers and things like that. But, I mean, there's plenty of other bigger bands that we'd like to play with as well. And, you know, and maybe even something like in our home province of Saskatchewan, there's not really a music festival of newer bands. They have some festivals like a folk fest and there's a smaller hippie fest that's fun. But I'd like to see a little more of like a sort of younger, new music vibe festival. At this point in my life, I'm just trying to keep up with everything that's going on in front of me before I branch off into these other ventures.
You know, if you could get on the road with someone who is at the next level from where you all, what would be a fun or a good mix?
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to say. The bands I like are, you know, they're all old and going away. But, I mean, people are always saying, well, you guys should play with the Allman Brothers. And, you know, as if all we have to do is just call up Greg and say, hey, man.
Right. Hey, buddy.
Can we hop on the bill? That would be a pretty cool one if somehow we could, you know, get the blessing to open for those guys or something like that. I mean, we got to do the Fogarty opening tour. It was pretty sweet. We opened for the Kings of Leon on a Canadian tour. You know, they're a superstar, you know, younger band. I don't know. There's a lot of bills out there that'd be nice to get on. You know, there's so much politics involved. And
very much.
Kind of stuff. Such a headache, you know.
And that's why it's almost more fun to talk about when you're not talking reality at all, because the reality of it is so much more complicated.
And if that's the case, then, like, you know, can Humble Pie reform?
Absolutely.
Like, can Peter Frampton get his hair back? Pre-blonde perm, back when he had straight black hair. When he was, like, 19 and he was in Humble Pie, he was a force.
You've got a lot going on with the tour and stuff. Do you have anything else going on with the album, though?
Yeah, we're working on our next video, which is painful. It's painful for us because we just hate music videos because they're always the same thing. You know, the band performing with a boring story kind of intercut. We're trying to make sure that the content that we release is interesting and worthwhile. You know, working on that, it's basically tour. You know, once the album comes out, you got to hit as much territory as you can and promote it and all
right.
That kind of stuff. You know, it's very early stages, so we're talking about maybe doing a little EP to come out in between major albums. Lots of ideas kind of in the works, I think.
Very cool. Very cool. Take it easy and drive safe, y'all.
Oh, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Country Fried Rock. Find the full playlist from this episode on countryfriedrock.org. Check us out on iTunes. No music, just talk. Our theme music is from The Full Tones.
Our Country Fried Rock stinger is from Steve Soto and the Twisted Hearts. Country Fried Rock.
Copyright 2012
by Lilypad Productions. All rights reserved.
Ever he been helping us, Country Fried Rock.